second guess. They didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission. Listen, it's beyond description. We don't want to fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate. Rub the lamp, lad.
Before we get started, on behalf of myself and the team, I'd just like to explain a little bit about where we're coming at with relation to this topic. We'd like to be clear that at no point are we suggesting that either the individual is not okay or the organization is not okay. Some of the examples that we discuss in this situation does not cast any blame on any one individual or organization. It's more about sharing the experience of a circumstance that was just not right for either party. So we hope that's clear. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub, the podcast. I'm Ray, and joining us this week, we've got Lisa and Sophie.
Hello.
Hiya.
Gary can't be with us this week because he's actually incredibly busy. So we wish him the best of luck with that, working on a Sunday. God love him. But I'm sure he's churning out great work, so good luck with that. And he'll be back with us in the next cast when it will be indeed the day after his birthday. So we'll maybe have a little birthday greeting for him. So the conversation topic for this week, it's kind of following on from our awareness and authenticity casts. And it's to explore some of the things Sophie alluded to it on the last cast where you were talking, Sophie, about you're questioning what it means to be professional and, you know, how congruent you are in your role in an organization. And I attended a seminar online at the Byrne Institute during the week, and it was given by a lady called Marion Timmermans, who is a TSTA in TA in organizational development. And TA in organizational development is very much about the person in the role in the organization. So those three different dynamics. And I'll put a little graphic up on the show notes for this podcast just to demonstrate that so people can see it. But she was talking about how the three different aspects under normal circumstances, it would be depicted by an equilateral triangle because you would have the person, the role, and the organization are all in balance and everything's tickety-boo and working great. But then when you inject context into that, you then get maybe a skewing of that triangle and it doesn't necessarily look like an equilateral triangle. So what I mean by that is there may be more emphasis on the role in a particular context. And I'm thinking, for example, in a scenario where there's significant change going on in an organization, that your role as a manager comes more to the fore than who you are as a person. And maybe the organization takes a little bit of a step back because you're just managing things much more locally. We talked about in the current COVID context where people are remote working and stuff, how very little really for a lot of people the organization is a thing at the moment, that the organization has almost taken a step back and it's more about the person in the role and the role of the manager or the leader in that context. So I really wanted to sort of just throw it open to you guys. I will say I put this out to my friendship group over the last couple of weeks, just to ask for people's experiences of where they were in a situation where they couldn't feel that they could really be themselves. And I had two particular and very significant pieces of feedback from two people who, for obvious reasons, I'll keep anonymous. But the first person shared with me that she's literally just resigned from a role because she was working for an organization and she very quickly realized once she was in role that the expectations of the organization, as to what the role was and her expectation of what the role was and how that fitted with her as a person were completely at odds. So it was absolute conflict from every single position. And it ultimately led her to a decision where she felt she couldn't to honor herself and her own integrity, she couldn't continue in the role. Now, there was nothing, there was no ethical issues with it or anything like that. It was purely who she was expected to be and how she was expected to perform to undertake the tasks of her role were completely incongruent with who she is as a person and what her personal beliefs and expectations for herself are. The other person, she talked about the fact that when she's at work, because I asked about, you know, does she, when she goes to work, does she feel that she can really be her true authentic self? And she felt that absolutely she couldn't, and that there was an expectation upon her in terms of how she dressed, how she presented herself, and how she behaved, that from the organization's perspective, they saw it as a professionalism thing and how it looked to clients. But from her perspective, it seemed to be more about conforming to some expected standard rather than it being about how able or otherwise she was to perform her role. And then she actually said on top of that, she said, I actually feel much more comfortable when I'm reacting with the clients, when I'm transacting with the clients, than when I'm transacting with my boss. And I thought that was incredibly interesting. So I'm going to shut up now and throw it open to you two to just understand what your experiences and your thoughts about this are.
I think for me, the biggest reason for me leaving my corporate employed job to run my own business was because I felt like I couldn't be myself in the organisation that I was working in. But I couldn't exhibit my strengths in the way that I wanted them to. And to a certain extent, I very much felt like a square peg in a round hole. Mm-hmm. And the only way I felt like I could own my authenticity was to become my own boss and make mm-hmm. my own rules and set my own destiny in terms of what my targets are and who it is I'm working with and what makes me my best self, how I play to my strengths. And I've been in it in so many situations where I have really felt like I'm having to be somebody else, and it's made me feel very, very uncomfortable, and ultimately it hasn't produced my best work.
You indicated, Sophie, the other week that in one particular instance, it actually made you ill.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the situation I'm talking about, right? Let's take it for example of I was in a head of service position looking after organisational development. So it was very much coaching, it was leadership development, it was aligning the organisation's strategy to the people strategy. And mm-hmm. I absolutely loved that role. I was in such a creative position. I felt like I had a voice. I felt like I was an expert in that area. People regarded me as the go-to person on all things on that front. And I really felt like I'd carved a space for myself in the organisation. When I then got promoted to director of HR and workplace culture, that was when it all shifted for me. And I then become the KPIs person. I then become the person who would get the telling off by the board because the appraisal process, you know, stats weren't looking great, or why were there so many people leaving, or sickness data, etc., etc. And it completely destroyed all of the fun, the enthusiasm, the skill that I had, by putting me in a position where it was just driven by data, which is not my skill set at all. My skill set is very much creative. And therefore, I had to become somebody I wasn't. And there's only so much of living that lie you can take before my body took over.
Yeah.
And I remember standing at the bus stop waiting to get on my coach because I commuted from Kent into London on a commuter coach service. And I could not get on that coach. I just, this huge panic attack came over me. And it was like my body saying to me, how much longer can you carry on living this life, pretending to be this person, this thing, pretending to enjoy something, pretending to put on a face of something that just isn't you? And that was my turning point. But it made me very, very ill. I was signed off work for a couple of months and I never returned back. And now I've been running my own business for 2.5 years, doing the exact same thing that excited me in my previous role on a more strategic level, on a more director base level, expert level, but with clients who appreciate that, who appreciate the creativity. And actually, I'm now in a position where if I feel that I'm going to be doing something which is going to go against who I am and my understanding of professionalism, then I won't take on that task and I will pass it on to someone else or, you know, graciously decline.
So can I just maybe unpack this a little bit with you for a second? So what I'm very interested to understand, Sophie, is like, what was the dynamic that was going on there? So it sounds like there was an expectation from the organization of what that role was supposed to look like. And there was an expectation from you about what you felt the role should look like. And the two weren't in harmony. What do you think might have happened if you had tried to approach that role playing to your personal strengths?
Well, I had tried that. To convince myself to do the role and to do it in a way that made me happy. I tried to inject some of my strengths into that, but you cannot get away from a board report cycle that every 3 weeks, and you are the person that has to turn up with 4 or 5 reports that have been written by you. You can't get away from the scrutiny and how I felt was almost being put on trial every time I walked into the boardroom to defend a decision or to explain something, which in a certain extent I was completely out of my depth on, because my experience, and I don't know, you know, how many people out here listening are HR practitioners, but I had chosen a very, very specific element of HR to concentrate on, which was very much proactive people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was now having to work in a reactive people space where I was having to make nasty decisions about employment tribunals and grievances and disciplinaries and redundancies. And if you can imagine, if you are very much a people person, you're developmental, and the role that you play is about seeing the potential in everybody, seeing them grow, nurturing the talent, and then by default seeing the organisation grow. To then be in a position where you're being asked to restructure the organisation, have difficult conversations where people lose their jobs, where you're defending an organisation at an employment tribunal, etc., etc. That's two completely different types of people. And as much as I tried to bring my strength into it, and it's not the organisation's fault at all, it's completely mine. I should have realised sooner that that role was not a right fit for me, and I should have moved on sooner, and I should have stuck to my authenticity and stuck to who I was rather than trying to fake it till I make it. And I'm all for faking it until you make it. Mm-hmm. But in that particular circumstance, I was trying to play it till I make it to become something I did not want to become. I think it's different if you're doing it because you want to do it to challenge yourself and to develop yourself for positive, goal-orientated reasons. But that was not the reason I was doing it, and I was effectively trying to become somebody that I wasn't. And that's ultimately why my body took over and said, look, you're not listening to your head, so your heart's got a rule now.
So let me just ask you, and please, you know, you don't have to answer this, but so the purpose of that role, I don't quite know how to frame this question. I guess what I'm trying to ask is, if that role hadn't been there, so if those board reports weren't getting written, what difference would it have made to the organization? If, for example, you were much more focused on the delivery of the HR function, and even if there was some nasty business to be done, to do it in the most fair and sensitive and proactive way possible, what do you think would have happened to the organization had that person not been there to write those reports and face that? What value does that role bring, is what I'm asking.
What I will say is that we were in a highly regulated organization where, and I've got an argument against KPIs, et cetera, but for the organisation at that time, for where they were at and what was going on internally, the narrative, the story, the data was important to them. It didn't feel that important to me, but it was important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And had it not been provided, I actually think it would have been a very serious issue for them. Mm-hmm. Provided. And I can understand why. I can absolutely understand why, given the context of where the organisation is at. I think the organisation was not a fault at all. And for nearly 5 years, I was incredibly committed to that organisation. I loved my job. I loved what the organisation did. I loved supporting the people that our organisation supported. It was a magical, wonderful experience. It just so happened to be, which is quite often the case, I think, that you are promoted, perhaps not for the right reasons. You know, I've seen leaders move up in management because of time served. You know, they've done the job for such a long time. They, you know, they must be the best person to lead this service, and people are promoted. And that's what happens to me. But I wasn't necessarily the right person for that job at all.
It brings to mind, Gary and I talked about this on one of the very, very earliest casts. We talked about, I shared an experience where I had been a line manager in a multinational organization. And when it came to people development and appraisal and all that sort of thing, they had a very convoluted software tool to manage that process. But it actually became managing the tool was the important thing. So on the roll up, on the run up to appraisal season, shall we call it, you'd be starting to get the emails about, you know, you've got five people who are your direct reports, you've got to prepare all of the appraisals, you've got to book them in the diary, and all these things were measured. There was never any question about the value of the actual act of appraisal or anything like that. It almost became about meeting the KPIs that were measured through this tool. And I remember that the retributions that used to happen if you were late in submitting, because HR had a KPI where all appraisals had to be closed out by a certain date. And it became about meeting the KPIs and had very little relevance to any relationship to the individual.
Well, I tell you what the issue there is that, and this is me very much talking from my HR experience, is that those KPIs sit with HR in the first place. Because, you know, we cannot, why should HR be responsible for making sure that everybody in the organisation gets their appraisal?
Yeah.
When actually it's the manager's role to sit there, an integral part of the manager's role is having performance discussions with their staff, is having one-to-ones. If they need someone to police that, then there's something going wrong. And this is what used to really frustrate me with, you know, being accountable for that data. Because I can't strong-arm a group of managers into talking to their staff. It should be something they do automatically, and that then goes down to their leadership focus. And
yeah, it should be a fundamental part of their role.
Absolutely. And therefore, it should be very much like a balanced scorecard approach to leadership, where there are key people elements that are in there to which managers are measured against. So going back to the whole KPI bit, that was partly a difficulty for me, because I didn't, to a certain extent, see why that was my measurement. Why was it my measurement? Why was that my KPI?
Mm.
Anyway, I sound like I'm going into a moaning this.
And ultimately, what's the effectiveness of those measures? I mean, there's the old saying that we make important those things that we can measure rather than trying to measure what's actually important. Because quite often what's important is not necessarily easy to measure in a particular metric.
No. But to bring it back to your initial question around authenticity, et cetera, the experience that I had was of no reflection on my organisation. I still hold that company in very high esteem. I had some amazing times there, and I've got some amazing friends there. And what the organisation exists to do, I still speak very highly of in terms of the service they provide. For me personally, it just goes back to me not feeling like I can be my authentic self, because the role design wasn't right for me.
Mm.
And I knew that at the time when I took the role on. But I thought, just give it a go, just push yourself, challenge yourself. And unfortunately, that was just a challenge too far for me. But
yeah,
it just wasn't right. So to summarise, it's about aligning who you are, what you do, what you believe in, your values, your sense of purpose to what the organisation is asking you to do and whether that job design fits. And that's ultimately what I've now learned, that I won't take on any role, position with a client, but I do not feel plays to that.
Yeah. And I'd just like to add on the back of that before I go across to Lisa, like this isn't about, so to take a transactional analysis phrase, we're not suggesting at any point that either the individual is not okay or the organization is not okay. It's not an issue of that. It's about horses for courses, I suppose, if you like to use a phrase. So like this conversation is not in any way to cast any shade on any organization or indeed any individual. And I'd even go further to say that, like, I've been in situations where I knew I wasn't right for the role. I didn't feel congruent in the role. It didn't speak to me as a person. In fact, in some cases, it really challenged me from an integrity perspective. But there was a greater pressure at that point in my life because I had a young family to support, and you know, it was economically the situation was quite poor. So I was just happy to be in a job, and I did the very best I could under those circumstances, because my main focus was to make sure that I continued employment and that I was able to support my family. So I'm not going to suggest for a second that just because somebody's in a role that they don't feel comfortable with, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything wrong with that, because they may have all sorts of reasons why they choose to be in that role. We're very much kind of coming at this from an idealist perspective of, If all of the circumstances were correct, whereby the only choice and decision you had to make was whether I'm the right fit for this role, or whether I feel comfortable in this role, or whether, you know, it's the right balance for me. It's very much an idealist situation, because I appreciate there's a million and one other factors that need to be factored in. But I'd just like to jump across to Lisa, if I may. Lisa, so when I sent out the message during the week in advance of this cast, I was very much interested to understand from your perspective, like you kind of wear many hats in your role as manager of the workshop. And I don't want you to limit your experience to that, by the way. But you are, you know, you're an employee of a business. You're a manager in a setting. You're a front-facing person for clients. It's very much a front-facing role. And I'm not expecting you to, you know, to suddenly divulge that you feel completely conflicted by your role or anything like that. But, you know, do you ever feel that there's a pressure in there for you to be various different types of people all at the same time?
Yeah, but I think that is the role. So as the workshop, I am the manager, and officially I'm the only employee of the workshop. So I don't have an HR person to send anything to. It's everything comes back to me, whatever it's about. So whether it's the marketing, it's the customer service, the accounts, initially I am that contact person for everything. And talk about different roles and things, I definitely know. Yeah, I almost mentally put a different hat on when it comes to dealing with different issues, to kind of focus me in on what that is. So whether it's about the marketing side of stuff, because that needs, I've had to do a lot more video since I started the job, and that's going to increase in the coming months as well. So I definitely have to put a different way of thinking on when I'm doing that stuff, because that is all about trying to get across what it is we want people to be able to expect from the workshop. So it's keeping it real and not raising their not bad expectations, because I'm totally biased. I think it's a great place, but it's being able to get that away across to people in an authentic way, so that actually when they turn up at the door to the workshop, what they get is what they're expecting, having seen any marketing we've put out or any conversations I might have had from them. But I would then totally put on a different hat if I'm dealing with credit control with our tenants, because that's another totally different type of conversation. I feel quite lucky at the minute that everything generally seems to go all right most of the time. But I also still feel quite new to that role, having joined them in October last year. So, and it's been a crazy start to a new job as well. I thought the first few months were crazy, but with COVID kicking us all out, it's not really been, the job hasn't really been what I expected it to be. And that's really changed things, and I've had to adapt with that. So it's good. It's offered up some new opportunities that are coming up. But yeah, I've definitely been in positions that I wasn't expecting to be in.
So from your
6 months,
from your back catalogue of experience, right, have you ever felt that you're ever been in a role where, and obviously you don't need to give specifics, but have you ever felt that you've been in a role where there was an expectation on how you should be, dress, behave, operate, that didn't chime with who you are as a person?
Well, yeah, I think when I was younger and worked for certain supermarkets and retail outlets, there was always a uniform, there was a dress code. So you were expected to turn up as they expected to see you. So that was the uniform, in the right shoes, with your hair in the right, pulled back, whatever the guidelines were, that was what was expected of you. And that's how you would turn up ready to work. Mm. I think as the jobs went on, then especially the start of my career was much more office based. And I still had quite a lot of customer facing jobs, but it was my own choice about what I wore, so I think there's probably some development in that. But now it's really weird, actually, because the 6 years I spent self-employed, I definitely went with what I felt comfortable in, and because the more comfortable I felt, the more confident I was dealing with clients and pitching for work and doing presentations and whatever was required. And actually going for the job at the workshop, when I was deciding what to wear for the interview, because I probably hadn't had an interview for about eight, nine years, not a formal interview. That was the thing that worried me most, was about what to wear, because I didn't want to go in and set an expectation that, I didn't want to go in dressed in a way that I knew didn't work with the workshop, knowing what I know about the building. I didn't want to go in dressed in a way that that's what they would expect from day one if it wasn't something I wasn't used to wearing. So I didn't want to go suited and booted, because it's just not me. It's all about, I suppose for me, it's all about dressing for the occasion. So if that's required, I will do it. But knowing how the workshop was, it was much more, for me, it was about going into that interview feeling comfortable so that I could put the best me across to my boss, who luckily is now my boss. And weirdly, I remember wearing shoes to the interview. And one of the things the following week in a conversation as a follow-up to that was something, we had a whole conversation about footwear. And she's like, you're going to want a good pair of trainers. And I was like, that doesn't feel very like work-like to me. But I've pretty much lived in trainers type shoe ever since.
Yeah, because you're probably on your feet all the time.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I am up and downstairs. But it's just kind of accepted. Like, I haven't ever felt that it's the wrong thing to be doing. It doesn't make me any less good at my job because I'm wearing trainers. In fact, I can now get around the building a lot quicker because, yeah, I'm in comfy footwear. So,
well, that's interesting you say that, because one of the pieces of feedback I had in the week around from the lady who said that she felt more comfortable operating with her clients than with her boss She felt that particularly around dress, there was an expectation from the organization that she should dress in a certain way, which actually, for all sorts of reasons that I won't go into, made her physically uncomfortable and actually affected her ability to perform her role. Her role being there's a lot of administration to it. So she spends a lot of time sitting at a desk, and actually the dress expectation didn't really work with that particularly well. And she felt that sometimes when she interacted with clients, actually she got the impression that they would prefer that she turned up more, I don't want to say looking like them, but you know, less sort of formal and corporate, because the industry she works in is very much about people making individual and personal decisions. And I guess they wanted to see somebody who they could feel a bit of empathy with, rather than somebody who was trying to portray a particular persona.
Yeah, and years ago when I worked at the college, I predominantly spent my time in marketing for most of it, but I worked really closely with the student advice team. So they would give all the guidance to people wanting to come onto courses. Mm-hmm. And we catered for all ages, so from sort of 14, 15, right through to their 60s, 70s, depending on what they wanted to do. And there was a really big thing. So we had four or five guidance advisors, and there was a really big debate at one of our team sort of annual planning days about the dress code, because everyone wore their own clothes. There was no set uniform, but this became a discussion: was should there be a uniform so that we're all recognised as part of that team to students? But we also had two male guidance advisors. One was very much shirt and trousers relaxed. The other one was suit and tie, whatever. And we actually changed stuff up, because the feedback from a lot of the, especially younger students, was that being sat across a table from a guy who was, for them, probably, he was older than me at the time, but probably seemed quite of an age to 16-year-olds. The suit and tie was quite intimidating when he was trying to chat to them about their dreams and aspirations and what they wanted to do. Whereas the guy that dressed in shirt and trousers with an open neck got far more response from certain ages, and a better response because of how it made them feel. They didn't feel quite so... I think because a lot of the teachers back then still wore suit and ties, they immediately felt that they were in that environment where they were being questioned and judged and whatever. Whereas I think now, actually, even my experience when I went to uni, which was a lot later than a lot of people, the dress code for a lot of the lecturers and stuff was far more relaxed than I was expecting and that I'd experienced at the college. But I think that's just something that's become more and more allowed, I suppose, that sort of development.
I think uniform is a slightly different dynamic. And the reason I say that is because, so I was having a conversation with my friend who used to work in the airline industry as a member of cabin crew. And one of the major lessons that they were taught in cabin crew training was that in an emergency, people will follow the uniform.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely necessary, you know, having worked in sort of front-facing roles, you know, as a nightclub doorman and stuff, to have an authority, a uniformed authority figure in an emergency is actually quite important in terms of when you need to do crowd control and get people to behave in a particular way en masse. But Eric Byrne, who founded Transactional Analysis, one of his major issues with the way that psychotherapy used to be done was it was very much psychotherapists wore white coats and everybody to them was a patient, and it was very much like, you know, I'm the professional here, I know what I'm doing, and I'm going to tell you what you need to do to fix yourself. And Eric Byrne really railed against that, because he felt that actually, no, you need to be, to properly transact with somebody, you need to be present at their level. And that's not to be condescending or anything. But I am interested in, so my experience in construction, and particularly for women in construction. I'm going to put it out there and people can tweet me or whatever, you know, have a go at me. I don't care. I've got demonstrable experience of this. The construction industry in the UK is run by middle-aged white men. And invariably, we feel most comfortable with middle-aged white men. And we talk a lot about wanting to encourage young women and diverse ethnic groups into the industry. And then we make it practically impossible for them to do so. Unless, of course, they're willing to behave like middle-aged white men just wearing women's clothes. That sounds a bit weird, but I hope you understand what I mean. So my question is, I'm gonna throw an elephant into the room. From your two perspectives as fully qualified women in the world, what is your experience of expectation of you as a woman in any of the roles you've ever been in? And do you feel that there's ever been any disconnection with what you believe or who you feel you are?
Well, I want to come back to the point you just mentioned about the women have to pretend in, you know, having to pretend to be the white collar male grey suit, etc., etc. I was just thinking about that, and the female executives I have worked with who've been in like chief executive positions across most of my career have done exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
They've cut their hair short. They've worn quite masculine looking clothes to assert their authority. And it's just, yeah, I don't know what else to read into that. But as you said that, I was just actually that.
Sophie, if I can, do you feel that they're trying to assert an authority, or are they trying to in some way mask their femininity? Because there's an entirely different dynamic that goes on. That,
I mean, it always came across to me as an assertion of authority. That's mm-hmm. what it felt to me when I was in their presence. And that's spanning across the whole 17 years of my HR career. However, I do think it is a masking of that. I think it is very much a belief, I guess, that as women, we can't get by without behaving more masculine. In which case we have to put on this persona to, you know, perhaps put some of our feminine side aside.
Can I challenge you with another perspective on that, if I may?
Well, I was just going to say but go on.
So my experience, I want to say, is that, I've had this feedback from women in construction, is that actually what they need to do is almost hide the fact, for example, that they've got breasts. Because there's an undercurrent of, well, I don't want anybody to think that I'm in any way trying to be provocative or anything like that. And it's almost like I have to dress as plainly as possible to mask any element of femininity, just in case one of my male colleagues gets a notion. And if that's the case, that's incredibly sad in this day and age.
I've witnessed sexual harassment in the workplace, and that was in a very much a male-dominated environment. I have felt that way myself when I used to completely own myself in terms of how I dressed, what I looked like. I didn't care that I was a female. I actually embraced the fact that I was a female until such time as my manager decided to say some very inappropriate things to me and make some very inappropriate advances. So on that front, that then naturally then made me feel like maybe I brought that on myself. Maybe I shouldn't have dressed in that way because maybe it was giving the wrong impression. And then all of a sudden, you know, the roll neck tops came out and the floor length skirts came out and the little ballet pumps rather than high shoes. And obviously I was very early in my career at that point. And I've since very much grown, you know, 10, 15 years on from there. I don't care anymore, right? To be honest, I mm-hmm. do not care. If I want to walk into a workplace in a short skirt and a low cut top, I'm going to do that. If people can, I'm not saying that I do, but if people cannot take me seriously for the value that I provide in terms of my output and the voice that I'm sharing, then they are not people I want to work with. And I think, sadly, a lot of women, so in fact, I'm coaching a couple of women at the moment who do not feel they can own themselves. And actually, we're basing everything so much on, you know, first impressions, looks. You know, Lisa was talking about, you know, wearing trainers in the workplace and, you know, the feel that goes with that. I'm actually at the point now where I don't care what I look like when I turn up to a Zoom call. I don't care whether somebody judges me because I'm wearing my bright red lipstick and I've got my high heel shoes on. It just, for me, is I'm owning this now. And if people don't want to engage with that and don't want to see a strong female presence, then I don't want to work with them at all.
Do you think that's out there? Do you think there's a prevalence of people being in some way intimidated or otherwise not wanting to engage with you because that's how you choose to turn up in the moment?
No, I've never had a single one of my clients. No, none of them.
That's really promising in a way.
Yeah, and I, to be honest, I think that's because of how I attract my clients.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm very clear on how I project myself. So if you don't like that, you're probably not going to engage with me in the first place. If you want me to behave like a middle-aged man, and this isn't, you know, this is no offense to middle-aged men, but if that's what you're looking for and you're expecting me to come across like that, I am not your client. And I've been very clear, actually, in my message, because, you know, my strap line is about putting the wow into work. So if you don't want the wow factor, if you don't want fun, engaged, if you don't want motivated employees, if you don't want something a little bit different that perhaps breaks the traditional rules, then you're not going to work with me anyway, regardless of what I look like. So I've been quite clear in my marketing and how I work with people that this is what you get when you work with me. And if that's not your cup of tea, that's absolutely fine.
That's really encouraging to hear that. I mean, as you were describing there about your previous experience, I actually had a massive wave of sadness and then a little bit of outrage that came across me, because it's something that, particularly as the father of two young women, it really agitates me. And I've had experiences all my working life where amazingly talented women have been basically thrown out of the industry or otherwise rejected by the industry because they were unwilling to conform with a particular stereotype. And I'm actually really encouraged by what you're saying there. And I guess it kind of comes back a little bit to that decision you took to work for yourself and to be able to own yourself and be your true authentic self.
But isn't that also sad in a way, Ray? That I felt I had to leave employment, but I had to start my own business because I didn't feel like there would be the kind of employer out there that would fit my needs. And in some respects, I find it quite sad that that was, I mean, I very much enjoy what I do. I wouldn't change it. I'm actually unemployable now.
Yeah.
So there's no way I could go back into an employed environment. I crave my freedom far too much for that now. But I also find it quite sad that it come to that. It come to me having to leave paid employment to find really who I am and really do what I think is right.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel there was the right organisation out there for me that fitted that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It is a sad state of affairs in 2020 that we're in that situation.
A lot of what Sophie said totally resonates, and I think and whether it's just a bit of age and experience as I've got older, I just think, especially where the dress stuff comes into it, it's just being able to put your best self forward and feel like you've put the best version forward for whatever situation you're in. And that way I always get the best work out of it. So, I'm lucky. The workshop especially is quite a relaxed environment with everybody. So I think if I was sat there in a suit and tie, I'd feel awkward compared to everybody else because they're all quite relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite nice having the choice, I suppose, to be able to, put myself across. And I do, I don't ever feel like I turn up and I'm not me. So that's probably one really good part of the job.
Mm.
And whatever role I'm taking on that day, it's... which can be multiple throughout the day. It's, yeah, I know that I'm being me. I'm not trying to be anybody else or...
Yeah, I mean,
you
wouldn't want to be up to your elbow with a plunger in the toilets, like if you're wearing like a 3-piece suit, you know?
No. And that was kind of what got told to me at the beginning job. And I've been there with a plunger, so.
Yeah, I know you have. It's one of the first stories you've ever shared with me. And it will stay with me forever.
Yeah, but it's been real. It's being real about the job. Mm. And I think that's probably it. I've also totally capture what the job's all about because of that. So, yeah, it's good.
Well, thank you both for that. I mean, just because time's against us now, Sophie, you need to go. So just to sort of maybe close out, what I would say is that, we got onto there specifically about some of the gender issues and the biases. I'm very interested to hear from listeners about their experiences with regards to bias, conscious or otherwise, around role and what organizations expect of people in roles. And why is it perhaps that we as individuals, you know, we expect when we present to a professional that they will appear in a certain way, and we gravitate more towards one type of presentation to another, irrespective of what implication that does or doesn't have on their ability to be the best at that particular job. And maybe, you know, are we moving towards a society where people can be much more individualistic? I've loved the whole online experience since lockdown of people not presenting in an office situation as this facade, you know, in whatever way they choose to dress, that I'm actually getting to see people in meetings, you know, wearing their gym jams or whatever, or some people do want to present wearing a shirt and tie or whatever, but seeing that individualism and actually starting to realize a little bit more about the person behind the role. And for me, because I resonate with that and that's how I like to transact with people, that's been a really positive experience. But I'd love to hear our listeners' experiences on this, because we're definitely going to come back to it. You can email us at podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. And just before we wrap up, I'd just like to put a couple of things in the diary. So I'm just waiting for confirmation back from Matt Taylor and John Fleming. I've sent them the edit of the interview I did with them. They're the guys from Three People in Your Head, the podcast about transactional analysis. So as soon as they're give me the green light, that will be released, hopefully, maybe even as early as next Monday, the 22nd. And that's all I've got to add. Thank you both. That was a very interesting conversation. Like, we could really go on about it, and we will definitely come back to it based on listeners' experiences that they share with us. And maybe we'll go into some of the specifics in a little bit more detail about what we've talked about. Brilliant. Thank you guys. All right. A wonderful week.
Yes, and you.
Cheery bye.
Right, bye.
They didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission. Listen, it's beyond description. We don't want to fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need